This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Just to give you a sense of how lopsided the polls say the race is for Michigan's 12th congressional district, according to the Cook Political Report, Rashida Tlaib, who represents the 13th congressional district right now, is running in the 12th district, has a 23-point advantage over her opponent. Now, again, elections happen for a reason. Everybody gets a chance to go and cast their vote for the person that they want. But, of course, this is a strongly Democratic part of our state, and it would be difficult for any Republican to get that seat. At the same time, you've got Rashida Tlaib running to represent that seat as a Democrat. And she is someone who, since she has been elected to Congress, has really become much bigger than just a representative in her district or a representative of our state. She has become a national figure, a voice for social justice and equality. She's got a lot of ideas about what she would like to do if she is elected for a third term in Congress, and we are really pleased to have her here to talk about her record so far and what she'd like to do. Rashida Tlaib, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen, for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with this. Tell us why you're running for re-election and specifically why you're running in this new 12th congressional district.
You know, I think one of the things that I talk about is being the eldest of 14 and taking care of people all my life. And for me, being able to take care of the community that raised me, communities, especially the new communities that now want to see someone that can continue to speak truth to power, but actually bring, you know, resources back to the community. I feel very strongly that my lived experience is something that is very much needed and missing in Congress and is going to benefit every corner of my district, from struggling with, you know, being a child of immigrants, struggling in a school system that sometimes didn't get the investments it needed, struggling to make sure that there's affordable housing, auto insurance, you know, just the fact that I struggle still with auto insurance. Mm-hmm. All of those things is that, for me, it's that lived experience more than any degree, more than, you know, some of these things that folks focus on is what I bring, which drives me to move with the urgency that I think my residents very much need and feel like is missing in Congress.
Mm. So one of the big differences between this new district and the district you represent now is that it picks up some of southern Oakland County, and that is a different part of our region. But talk about the difference between the district you represent now and this new district, and whether you think that requires some different approaches or ideas. What is it about the makeup of this district that that you're thinking about right now?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's been incredibly popular all throughout the district in the new areas is the approach that I take with the neighborhood service centers. You know, getting people through everyday challenges is as equal, if not even more, in passing legislation that changes people's lives, right? For me, making sure that from the student debt cancellation program to the PACT Act that just passed for our veterans, is making sure that my residents have a place to go that can walk them through those processes. So I don't care if it's Oakland County communities that I'm hoping to represent next year, or my new community of Livonia and Dearborn, many of which love and have already heard and said, we heard you have one of the strongest constituent services programs. That, to me, is important and critical. However, I'll tell you just a great story. You know, I've been working on reducing gun violence in our country and pushing back against this narrative that we're taking something away, not actually providing more safety and peace for our kids in schools and places of worship and so forth. That I do feel this sense of, especially in Oakland County, what happened in Oxford is still very much paying a huge prevalence. Honestly, Stephen, like I just brought it up this past week with some of the precinct delegates in Oakland County, that they feel like we need to do more than what is done. And I talked about the fact that I'm one of very handful of, you know, members of Congress right now really pushing the ban on assault weapons and how those weapons of war are why they can kill so many people within such a short period of time. And, you know, again, I'm excited about folks that are focused on that, right? And I'm, you know, realizing again, it's those experiences they've had, and that it was so close to home that we can have that kind of violence in our schools. In the mental health crisis, again, different lens. But when I hear Dearborn talk about, you know, majority of the public safety issues are stemmed around mental health crisis, that's something, as somebody that's represented Detroit, you know, almost 6 years in the state house, and folks, I've, you know, started the first ever Southwest Detroit Community Justice Center, where we look at different alternatives in the court system to actually get people mental health services and wraparound services, so that it's not just extreme mental health issues. If you have anger issues, like, how do we connect you to deal with those issues? Folks that are, might be bipolar, that are not getting the mental health support that they need. So, Stephen, for me, I'm excited because I'm like, oh, I, you know, we did this here when I was in the state house and when I worked in Downriver. What do you guys think about that? And they're like, oh, that's, yeah, we never thought about it that way. And so I'm excited. I guess it's the social worker in me. You know, I'm not a social worker by trade, but I really function that way, that I think in hope that folks are going to like that I'm really, you know, hands-on and very rooted in the community as I take on these issues that I feel like, you know, are not less important in Oakland County than they are in Wayne County.
Hmm. I'm talking with Rashida Tlaib. She is the current congresswoman from Michigan's 13th congressional district. She is running to represent the new 12th congressional district, which was drawn during our decennial redistricting process. If you have questions for the congresswoman, if you live in this new 12th district and want to talk about the race between her and Stephen Elliott, a Republican whom we just spoke to a few minutes ago, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Okay, Rashida, I want to talk about some specific issues. Inflation, of course, is a huge problem, and it hits working people the most, the people who you spend most of your time talking about and advocating for. Let's first talk about what you think is driving inflation and what you think we need to do. And I'll say up front that Stephen Elliott, your opponent, was talking specifically about gas prices. And he was saying that he believes that the move to cut off our investment in fossil fuels is what, for instance, is driving up gas prices. Now, I said that I thought there were some other factors as well, but address that point and talk about the rest of inflation and what you would do about it.
Well, I really want this to be clear that the only way we're ever going to meet our carbon emissions goals needed to meet the Paris Agreement, which I fully support, is to avoid to the point of no return to begin a transition to clean energy now, right? So this idea around expanding fossil fuel production is pouring gasoline on the fire. You know, it's true. It imposes, to me, a systematic like risk, a systemic risk to our financial markets as the climate crisis intensifies. And over again, when Chairman Powell comes before our Financial Services Committee, I ask him, why, when Europe and other folks are looking at climate risk, why aren't we doing that when we think about the economy here at home? But I have to be very clear, and I think listeners are probably not going to be surprised when I say, you know, to me, the underlying economic problem is, you know, profit price inflation, but it's caused by corporations, right, raising their prices above their increasing costs, right? Corporations are using the increasing cost of materials, components, labor as excuses to increase the prices even higher, resulting in bigger profits. See, that's the difference. So corporate greed, not wages, is playing a huge role in inflation now. It always has. You know, what's interesting, Stephen, is it's funny when you come to talk to my residents, they'll be like, what are you talking about? Inflation's been going on in my household, right? They've been talking about inflation before anybody else was talking about inflation, the high cost of childcare, the high cost of healthcare. For them, they're like, that's inflation to them, right? Mm-hmm. This is like, what are you talking about? The price of bread had been high for Rashida for 3 years and 4 years before all of this and everybody talking about it. And so for my folks, corporate greed is really driving and playing a huge component in this. And that's the part that nobody wants to talk about. The fact that they are making record profits. Think about it. If inflation is only hurting the everyday resident, my neighbor, and it's not hurting the corporations that continue to make record profits, what does that say? What does it say when the head of oil and gas companies are like, yes, we're going to continue increasing gas prices and price gouge. And we passed, you know, a bill I proudly supported on the floor around price gouging. But I'll tell you, the White House and other folks know, I feel like we need to put more enforcement and teeth behind that. If price gouging is happening with the oil and gas companies, they need to return the money. And we already know it's happening. There's nobody that at least disagrees that it's happening. Folks are coming up with these theories, but I always say, look at the numbers. Look at who's actually benefiting from inflation right now. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that, it's the same people that were hurting my residents before anybody was talking about inflation. They are making record profits, Stephen. And I feel very much there's other components. I agree. I'm not disagreeing there isn't. But I cannot have a really honest, decent conversation about how to address inflation in our country without actually talking about corporate greed that drives these policies.
Mm. So, and I got to this with Stephen Elliott as well, that there's a balance with almost all of these issues. It's not that there's one lever you can pull to fix those problems. You've got to think about lots of different things all at the same time. But I guess I'd love to hear you say what you think Congress in particular can be doing beyond what it's done to deal with inflation. If price gouging is the issue, as you said, we had a bill that passed that tries to address that. Right,
it's sitting in the Senate.
It's not going to get through the Senate, I don't think. So what is the thing to give people some relief?
You know, I know my residents want people to pay their fair share and be held accountable. You know, I know I'm not trying to put this in simple terms for folks intentionally, but I just want you to know how my neighbors see this. You know, when folks talk about and try to blame, you know, the president or others, they say, you know, Rashida, they act like the pandemic, if we did nothing, if we didn't try to open our schools up, if we didn't try to work on affordable housing, if we didn't try to work on the issue around food assistance while kids were out of school. I mean, all those things. It's like they're saying, well, they're going to leave us behind. Like, you know, they don't like that they're being the target and the reason that when we spend money on people, that is the cause, that wages in direct help to people is the cause and not the increased support and like kind of turning your back on what's happening with corporations and how they're using this moment, using the Ukraine war, using the pandemic to make more money. Many of them got money from the federal government and still did shareholder payouts. I mean, so for my residents, they want equal fairness and accountability. And Stephen, I am all about, let's sit down and talk about these various, you know, things that economists are saying. But when it comes down to it, no, I don't think there's any economist that doesn't say, yeah, we got to talk about price gouging. We have to talk about what's going on regarding corporate America, where they are literally giving the green light and dismissed as playing a role in inflation. And that's where I think my residents want to say enough. They need to be at the table. They need to pay their fair share. And they need to be held accountable for price gouging.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib about her reelection bid in the new 12th Congressional District here in Michigan. I also want to hear from you on the phones and on social. John on the east side, Anthony in southwest Detroit, Jim in Macomb, Deborah in Detroit. We will try to get to you when we get back. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today. I'm 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking right now with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who is running for re-election to Congress. She's running in a newly crafted 12th congressional district here in Michigan that includes parts of Oakland County, parts of the city of Detroit, and parts of Western Wayne. We're talking about her ideas for representing that district and the 4 years she's already spent in Congress. Want to hear from you as well about what you think about this district. Do you live in that district? What are you looking at in terms of issues? Weighing the candidates that you'll get to cast your vote for on November 8th. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Before we go to our listeners, Rashida, I want to talk about a couple of your votes, and specifically your vote against the infrastructure bill, which you and I have talked about a couple times because there was a deal involved in that bill that you told me at the time was never going to happen, and that was why you had to vote against that bill. Turned out you were right. the Build Back Better part of that deal never did come to fruition, but we did get the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act. So I want to talk first about your vote against infrastructure, which I got to be honest, there's people who ask me about that. Why did she vote against that bill? But then also what we ended up getting out of all of this, and whether that makes up for the lack of delivering on Build Back Better.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think folks need to realize in Build Back Better, and I don't think President Biden's done in addressing the issue around child care, ESSO expansion of health coverage, including, you know, hearing aids and other conversations that, you know, that we have had with the White House around affordable housing, because the housing crisis was existing prior to the pandemic. If anything, the pandemic made it worse. But I think it's important for listeners and folks that understand that it's a false choice to ask my residents to choose between safe bridges and roads and their quality of life around housing, child care, clean air, you name it. But I'll tell you an example. Like in the so-called infrastructure, bipartisan infrastructure bill, in there is charging stations, which everybody, of course, are like, we need charging stations. But in the Build Back Better was actually the rebate of close to $10,000, around that amount, I believe, for a car that's built in the United States. You get a little bit more money, right, to buy an electric vehicle. It's a rebate. And that's something that the UAW and many folks wanted to see hand in hand with, because, well, you're going to build charging stations, but you're not going to actually try to get these cars off the assembly line into people's driveways in front of their homes, right? I mean, so they can have access. So what's the point of having charging stations if folks can't afford to get the cars? And then also, how do we get them, you know, again, in people's hands? So the disconnect and understanding that those, both of them, Build Back Better in the infrastructure package, was always being done together. In the last hour, they separated it, in this sense that, okay, we're going to be doing that later. There was a promise that it was done. Many of us said, no more. We need more accountability. We passed the infrastructure. I passed the rule to actually take up the infrastructure bill in an exchange and a promise that we've moved the Build Back Better, which was so critically important to take on some of the poison pills, to be honest, from the fossil fuel subsidies that were in there, from talking about pipelines being reopened, and you name it, Stephen, was in the infrastructure bill. But then we had this huge, you know, high scale kind of implementation of climate actions, from even creating a climate core to dealing with, you know, again, the crisis that we have on air and water and so much more. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for folks to know, I am pleased that residents ask me about this because they get to know what's really in the bills. But I'll tell you, you know, I am now hearing from municipalities and others saying, wow, this is just not enough. I said, no, it is not enough, because you're now competing with the rest of the country on just probably a quarter of what was really needed to invest in removing lead lines out and so forth. And because I was pushing for, we actually had another $30 billion in Build Back Better that would have made a big difference in communities like City of Wayne and folks in Hamtramck and others that really need to see that kind of partnership from the federal government to remove, you know, to get for folks to get access to clean water. Now, wrong or not, but my folks were told that we were going to move them together. And a lot of people literally were confused about, well, wait, isn't this what you were talking about? It's like, no, they were actually together and they were separated because of one senator wanting to appease his donor base. He got everything he wanted. He got the pipeline in there. He got NEPA, certain projects exempted from NEPA, like this process. He got like a large exorbitant amount of money for fossil fuel subsidies. and my residents still didn't get child care, affordable housing, the investment in climate, and so much more. I just felt like it was a false choice to ask my residents to pick between those just because of one senator's donor.
And so, you know, when people say, look, she's not supporting the party, she's not supporting the party's agenda, how do you answer that?
Oh, no. President Biden, I think the one time we had a really great conversation, he was running, and he's like, you know, I'm going to need your help. I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to, you know, be there. I'm not going to be your favorite member of Congress, but I'll be there for you. I'll tell you what, but I'm on a different timeline, sir. My folks can't wait another year, another month, another week, another day for us to see real investment in people and communities that really have been waiting. They've been promised over and over again, we're going to do affordable housing. We're going to get you clean water. We're going to do all of these things. We're going to fix our school system. We're going to make sure that we have universal pre-K. And so I told him, I'm going to be that person that's going to be like, push, push, push. And he's going to, because I think people don't realize I am supporting President Biden's agenda more than anyone. Like, Build Back Better was his agenda, not the infrastructure bill, y'all. It was Build Back Better. And I'm proud, and hopefully he's there for another 4 years that we can actually work on child care and all these other issues that I know he is extremely passionate about. And so, you know, folks may think it's about that, but at least I know when I talk to the vice president, I talk to the White House, talk to folks about this at the time during this vote, that they respected why, because I told them the agenda he ran on, what he told folks that he needed to get done was in his Build Back Better proposal, which as a progressive, he brought people together. I said to the White House, I've never been in an event where the folks working on childcare were in the same room of folks working on clean water, with the same folks working on housing, with the same folks working on, you know, how are we going to get universal pre-K? I mean, it was amazing, Stephen. And I said to the White House, the president did that with his Build Back Better agenda. More people support getting Build Back Better done at that time than, you know, was really highly popular, except for the fact that they couldn't get it through some of the folks that obviously have been, you know, tainting the process on the Senate side and listening not to the people in the community they represent, but a handful of folks that, you know, are benefiting from us turning our backs to the people.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's quickly go to Anthony in Southwest Detroit. Anthony, I've only got a couple minutes left, but wanted to get your question in here.
Well, thank you very much. I've heard the word accountability come up quite a bit, and I remember Representative Tlaib saying that you wanted to be held accountable by representatives, by residents. So my question is, other than, you know, the election, how can we hold you accountable in the interim 2 years? And for example, your previous guest said that you're for defund the police, but I don't think many people know that a bill passed last year to fund Capitol Police by $2 billion more in the House, and it had zero votes to spare, meaning one vote could have stopped it, and you voted present. So, I mean, I don't really think you're for defund the police, and how can we hold you accountable other than during the election?
Great question, Anthony. I've got about 2 minutes left, Rashida, but go ahead and answer.
Yeah, no, Anthony, I'm very familiar with you, and I welcome you to all my town halls, but please try to ask a question, not heckle, you'll interrupt my speeches. But this is a great way of having this dialogue. You know, in there was a huge aspect of mental health for folks that went through the January 6th insurrection. And I just couldn't, of course, I voted president because I just couldn't turn my back on making sure that folks, because we had a couple folks that take their life from suicide, Stephen, after January 6th in the Capitol Police. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of challenges and things that I felt like was important to try to support folks that went through January 6th. I didn't like everything in there. That's why I couldn't vote yes. But at the same time, I couldn't turn my back on doing the mental health support that I thought was really important, especially with the trauma. And we've heard more and more now from Capitol Police that were there on the ground, that were beaten, that were injured, assaulted, and you know, just was in the middle of such a violent attack on our Capitol. And so it was important to me that, you know.
Yeah, it was important to you to support them. But
It was. Stephen,
defund the police.
I was very thoughtful that we weren't just talking about, oh, let's just give them more art. It was also about recognizing what they just went through. And, you know, even afterwards, you can see it in the eyes. And I mean, it was such a traumatic experience. But at the same time, I recognize my residents go through that same trauma when they get that knock on that window, when they get pulled aside as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if they're not, treated, I think, justly. And they feel unsafe. So I recognize all of that. And again, that's the lens that I bring.
Yeah. Okay. Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman in Michigan's 13th congressional district, running to be the new congressperson in this new 12th congressional district. It's always great to catch up with you and talk with you about the issues that you're facing there in Washington, but especially great around election time to have you talk with our listeners about your ideas. Thanks so much for coming by.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow. We're going to talk with a church leader of a new gun buyback program in Oakland County. Then we're going to sit down with Sri Thanadar to talk about why he's running for Congress in the new 13th Congressional District and what he hopes to accomplish if he takes office. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.